This is Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC, a monthly show devoted to the creative life. Generally, I have interviews with artists and writers, occasionally a talk by a meditation teacher, and that is the case this month. This one by Bhante Hene Pola Gunaratana, abbot of a meditation center about 50 miles west of Washington, D.C., recognized throughout the world for his clarity and skill in teaching. Before the talk, first, in honor of the revelations out of Washington this week, the atrocity exhibition by Joy Division. And by the way, you might find it amusing to go to the Guardian website and Google Judge Paul Chyka, where you can read about the lawsuit in Columbia County Court, where the local aviation company took the CIA contractor to court for not paying them for these rendition flights to black sites around the world where people would be tortured. They were referred to as invitees, bound and gagged as they were, and this was something that that the judge found worthy of note in itself. After Joy Division, Bob Dylan with a live version of A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, recorded at Carnegie Hall, June of 1963, when he was 22 and had recently taken New York by storm. After the talk, Ave Generosa by St. Hildegard von Bingen, lived from 1098 until 1179, recognized as a doctor of the church by Pope Benedict XVI in 2012, although she had been considered a saint by many parts of the Catholic Church for centuries. She's described in Wikipedia as a German writer, composer, philosopher, Christian mystic, Benedictine abbess, visionary, and polymath. After the piece by St. Hildegard, a reprise of a Dylan song by Brian Ferry.
Step inside. This is the way. Step inside. way. This is the way. This is the way. This is the way. This is the way. Step inside. This is the way. Step inside. This is the way.
Misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on six crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of seven sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard, and it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. Rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw a room full of men with hammers a-bleeding. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. Rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands was a-blazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sounds of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's hard, it's hard. It's hard, it's hard, it's hard, rains are gonna fall. Oh, who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman, her body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. Rains are gonna fall. And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm going back out before the rain starts a-falling. I walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and the hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, and the executioner's face is always well hidden. where the hunger is ugly, where the souls are forgotten, where black is the color, where none is the number. And I tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it, and reflect from the mountain so all souls can see it. And I stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, rains are gonna fall.
Another question is about peace. Why are there so many wars, so many crimes in the universe, everywhere? In fact, these days, wars and crimes have taken different twist. These days, they use modern technology, very sophisticated weapons, and very sophisticated means to commit crimes. Now we have the whole world is interconnected, networked, so to say. Therefore, it is very easy to communicate any criminal plan from one end to the other and quickly activate. That is, this kind of usage of modern science and technology, education, mass communication, made crimes and wars little completely different from the past. But the nature of committing crimes, the fundamental reasons for committing crimes are the same. They're not different because of the greed, hatred, and delusion. Fear, tension, anxiety, worry, rivalries, fighting, suspicion arise in each other's mind. And therefore, those days they used bows and arrows and clubs, sticks and fist knives. This day they use a different technique. That is the only thing. But fundamentally, human mind has not been changed since from time immemorial. Human mind has not changed. They still have greed, hatred and delusion. I think he asked what the delusion is. Delusion is not knowing the truth, reality. What is reality? Reality is that everything is impermanent. That's a reality, whether people accept it or not. Everything is impermanent. And everything that is impermanent is necessarily unsatisfactory. Nobody can say something impermanent is satisfactory. Sometimes people ask, well, how about suffering? Is it permanent? No, impermanent. If the suffering is impermanent, when the suffering disappears, is it not happiness? Surely it is happiness, provided suffering is uprooted by uprooting the cause of suffering. If the cause of suffering is eliminated, uprooted, destroyed, never to arise again, then suffering will be eliminated. That is not the case. People normally don't even want to think of the cause of suffering, but they want to eliminate the suffering without thinking the cause of suffering. And therefore, their temporary removal of suffering is not going to make them happy. Suffering will come back again, because the cause is there. And peace is not something that you can achieve by demonstrations, by negotiation. It is not a negotiated peace, it is not a political peace, not economic peace. Peace is unconditional peace. You don't put any condition for yourself to be peace. I shall be peaceful if you do such and such for me. No. Peace arises only when we eliminate all these deeply rooted psychic irritants. It arises in individual heart, individual mind. If I am peaceful, I know my vibration is peaceful. Everybody around me feels peace. And everybody tries to find out why is so and so calm, relaxed, peaceful. They find out that if I do something very substantial, meaningful, to make myself peaceful, then they emulate that. They also, if they want to be peaceful, they also would do the same thing. If I want to be peaceful, I should not hate anybody. I should not be very greedy, selfish. I should not hate anybody. I should practice metta, loving friendliness. I should understand that every living being wants to live. Even this tiny little ant crawling in the ground, on the ground, wants to live. And so if I have an attitude of respecting that life, then my mind becomes very calm, relaxed and peaceful. I have no hatred towards even a little ant. So, I think with peaceful thought, with peaceful state of mind. I talk peacefully. I don't want to say anything to hurt anybody, create a disharmony. And I act in a peaceful way. So I create peace within myself. And then everybody associates, and suppose somebody is practicing promoting peace within oneself, every day thinking, practicing, I must be peaceful, I must be patient, My patience is a sort of a buying time to say the right thing at right time for the right person with the right intention and chosen words, so that nobody will be offended. So, when I promote this, my peace, my patience, my determination, my loving friendliness, my compassion, my understanding, then my family members, if I do it in a family, my family members emulate. If parents always fight, use very harsh language to belittle, accuse children, children will not be peaceful. They will grow up as very nervous, uptight children, and they will not love parents. And when they go out, they do a lot of violent things. So crime, the home is the place where you breed crimes. This is a crime nursery. So from a crime nursery, you cannot expect peace. There has to be peace at home. And the head of the home, head of the house, must initiate peace. So everybody else follows. Boy likes to follow the father. Most girls like to follow the mother. Perhaps both children like to follow each other, mother and the father. So they have to practice that. And then their relatives, when they come to the house, they say, this is a very peaceful family. They learn how to be peaceful. Not very quickly, it takes time. And this is how if I influence 10 people to be peaceful, and those 10 people influence another 10 people, they can influence others to be peaceful. By using placard and shouting slogans, going on the street and demonstrating, you cannot bring peace. You can be political power. And you can be another promoter of agitation, excitement, and a party. I don't believe in that kind of peace. I believe peace is something that we individually, personally, quietly, privately, within ourselves, we practice. That will spread all over the world. If all 6 billion people in the world, each of them individually, separately practice peace, the world will be peaceful. But who wants to do that? I want him to be peaceful. I preach peace, and behind my back I have a gun. So that kind of peace we don't. Then he asked about, when we talk about delusion, he asked why there are so many religions. I said there are so many religions when different people have different tastes. There is no one single menu in every restaurant. Similarly, every individual's mentality, understanding, spiritual growth, taste is different. So there are so many religions in the world. And as he said, how can we lay people, we have family members, we have our jobs, and we have bills to pay, and all kind of things we have to do as lay people. How can we be peaceful as lay people? I said, this peace, I don't remember exact words I used, but the essence is that a peace is not something that has classes. Lay people have this much, married people have this much, unmarried people have this much, and monastic has this much, women must have this much, men must have this much, and so forth. There is no classification of peace. If anybody determined to do it, they can be peaceful. They, as I mentioned earlier, it is at home, while working, you can practice peace. You think in the morning, I want to meditate. When you meditate every day, you become peaceful. No meditator meditates to become violent. Nobody actually wants to be violent if they see what is going on their mind when they meditate. When they meditate, they can understand how difficult it is for them to gain little concentration. Why is it that? Why is it? Because their mind is not settled. So many unpleasant, negative things are going on our mind. And sometimes, you know, there are certain other circumstantial situations, like somebody is sick, somebody has a problem, relative has a problem, and they come and relate to you. Somebody is going to divorce, somebody has a property problem, court cases, and so forth and so on. Relatives, friends have all these things. When they come and report to you, how can you meditate? You think of all of them. But with your chaotic, unsettled mental states, you cannot settle any problem. You cannot help anybody. You will fall into the same group, and you will also suffer exactly like them. Therefore, you must understand, I want to help so and so, let me help me myself first. Let me calm myself, let me clear my mind. Let me have a deeper understanding, lot of patience, and think. If your mind is not calm, relaxed, peaceful, you cannot help anybody. And therefore, when you meditate every day, your meditation necessarily will make you very calm, relaxed and peaceful. That way you can help them. As a lay person, going to work, coming home, attending to your family commitments, you must meditate even more than monastics. Because monastics don't have that kind of commitments. But you must take it, and also I said, all depends on your priorities. If you make a priority list and put unnecessary things on the top and necessary things at the bottom, or even don't mention in a priority list, then you will never achieve anything. So in a priority list, you must put the best thing, the best, first. What is the best thing? Best thing is to keep the mind clean. When you keep the mind clean, everything becomes easy. If you make your mind confused, everything is confused. Everybody will get confused. So, meditate. Meditate in the morning, meditate in the evening, meditate when you go to bed. That helps you to be calm, relaxed, peaceful, and make a better achievement in your daily activities, better results, and you become more successful. Something like that. Right? Anything? My message? Yeah. This is my message to the whole world. That means live peacefully, cultivate peace within yourself. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody you are cultivating peace. Let it manifest through your words, through your thoughts, and through your deeds. And then others begin to wonder, gee, so and so is so peaceful. We want to know why, how so-and-so became peaceful. So you arouse their interest in, you know, cultivating peace. We have to see with mindful reflection. Wise attention is yoniso manasikara. Yoniso manasikara also is a very beautiful term. Yoni means origin, beginning. So we reflect from the very beginning of something. When certain things arises, from the very beginning of its arising, we remain mindful not to let the mind confuse. How can we be mindful? We should not start with any assumption, any preconceived notions. We must know it exactly as it is happening. Sometimes we meditators use a term, bare attention, pure attention, undivided attention, preconceptual or non-conceptual attention. Open-minded attention, meaning no any desire, particular view, not from any particular angle, leave all this aside. with the pure intention of just like a scientist. I don't try to compare Buddhism with science. It's a completely wrong comparison, because what they say something today, they change because they are very honest. They admit their shortcoming. They change it and find something. Buddha's teaching is not like that. But the method we use is almost the same. That means, without any prejudice, any bias, any view, we want to see exactly as it is. And paying attention to something from the very beginning to see exactly as it is called mindful attention, or wise attention. In wise attention, there is no greed, no hatred, no prejudice, no chanda, dosa, bhaya, moha. Chanda means will, fear, anger, or confusion. Without any of these things, with keeping the mind completely open to understand what really that is. That is exactly what the scientists do. They get something, use a microscope, and look at that thing and magnify it and see it exactly as it is, and record, collect the data, and then analyze this data. Then they come to a conclusion. In meditators' case, they don't take note separately. As they are happening, they pay attention. That is why in the mindfulness training we use the word anupassana. Anupassana means seeing it as it is happening. So impermanence is something that you can see as it is happening, because impermanence is not something that you can record. You cannot take note of impermanence. Impermanence is something you got to see with your mental eye as things are changing. And then you remember, that was impermanent, this is impermanent, that is impermanent, that is impermanent. No matter where you focus your attention, where you focus your mind, from the very beginning it is impermanent. That kind of wise attention is called yoniso manasikara. And that is extremely important point, important training to see impermanence. And because when we pay attention to something like that, we can see, in as we read in Anapanasati Sutta, anicca-anupassana, vipassana, viraga-anupassana, nirodha-anupassana, patinissagga-anupassana. Anicca, you see anicca. Since things are anicca, impermanent, nothing can stick there. That's called viraga. When something is moving very fast, you cannot stick anything there, because it is moving so quickly. No matter how hard we try to grab, you cannot grab. So, inability to grab something is called viraga. Viraga. Raga means gluing. Raga means gluing, glue to something. You cannot glue. Glue doesn't hold there, because it is moving so fast. Then you can see that happening. Mind cannot grasp anything except experiencing impermanence. Then nirodha anupassana. Then you see that which arises ceases right then and there. It doesn't go to the next moment at all. It arises now and it disappears now, without going one single iota of it to the next moment. That's called nirodha, cessation, cease, stops. And then patinisadganupasi, then the mind has an attitude of letting go, letting go. You know, these four stages are very important in meditation. First, we must see impermanence. Second, we must see, since it is impermanent, mind cannot grasp. Third, as you cannot grasp, because there on one hand it is moving, changing very quickly, on the other hand, it ceases very quickly. Ceases, it stops. When you try to grasp it, it's no longer there. What are you going to grasp? Like trying to grasp, you know, air. You cannot grasp. And then, virāga. And then, nirodha. It ceases. When it ceases, you say, well, let it go. The mind develops this strength, this ability, this skill to let go. And therefore, that's mindful reflection of wise attention is extremely important. Right? And that raises another important factor. That's a very good thing. Actually, this discussion stimulates the mind. Seeing from the root means there are six roots. Six roots. Greed, hatred, delusion on the negative side. Non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion on the positive side. So when certain things, certain mental state arises, the mindful reflection, yoniso manasikara, using the word yoni as literally, going to the root, beginning. Then we try to find out what is the beginning of this? What is the root? What is the root of this very particular mental state? Is it greed? Is it hatred? Or is it confusion, delusion, ignorance? Or, if it is something positive, we must see, is it non-greed? Non-greed means patinissagga, abandoning, letting go. Non-hatred is loving friendliness, metta. Non-delusion is non-self, without notion of self. So the roots are either patinissagga, abandoning, generosity, nekkhama sankappa, or metta, loving friendliness, with unconditional loving friendliness, or selflessness on the positive side. When we mindfully reflect, we can see these six roots. But on a more vipassana training, in addition to this, seeing these three roots, six roots, we must see anicca dukkha anatta. In our experiences, from the very beginning, without biases, prejudices, greed, hatred and delusion, we must look at it. So these are the two levels of yoniso manasikara. One is seeing the roots of that particular mental state. Second is looking at it from the very beginning without any greed, hatred, views, ideas, opinions and so forth. Thank you.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. Walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. Stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. Been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of the graveyard. It's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard. Drum.